Shalom, Berechot, many blessings of peace. This is Dr. Akiva Gamliel of B'nai Noach Torah Institute and Rock or Audio Visual Learning Library. Welcome. We're in Questions with Dr. Akiva Gamliel, Part 3. This interview was conducted by Rabbi Montoya for a course that she's taking in college regarding world religions. She was required to select a belief that was not her own and one that she was not familiar with and to gather information. And so as part of that research, she asked if she could have an interview with myself of B'nai Noach Torah Institute, and we granted that interview. The interview is about an hour and a half long, and we broke it up into three parts. And we invite you, if you haven't listened to part one or part two, to please do that first and then to come back and join us here at part three. Thank you for joining with me. Now we'll go into the third part of the interview, Questions with Dr. Akiva Gamliel, Part 3.
Dr. Akiva, I still have some other hard questions.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead.
I had read that with this relationship that Jewish people have with God, the covenant, throughout history when bad things happened, the people believed that they were bad, so they deserved what happened to them. And I read this up until the Holocaust. Then people started wondering why this was happening to them. And it seemed to me like it seemed a point in time where people started questioning that faith of that covenant. Is that true?
Well, I think any time, and I might add this also, yes, there were 6 million of B'nai Yisrael that died in the Holocaust. In fact, for my family, there were 300 of my family that died, God forbid. And it's a painful, it's a hurtful, and it's a very sad thing that one has to live with, okay? But you should also know a lot of Catholics died too. And not only Catholics, a lot of other people died. 18 million people slaughtered, God forbid, by that particular evil regime. And a lot of attention has been paid to B'nai Yisrael because we've been the forerunners of Holocaust museums and walls and never forget and things like that. But anybody that lost relatives is going to have some hollow places in their lives. They're going to have questions that they want to ask. And what I would say is like this. There's a saying that we say, whatever God does is for the best. Can you always understand what God does? Now, many times we cannot understand what God does. There are certain commands about Torah that are very clear. We understand why God gave those commands. Then there are certain commands about Torah. We have absolutely no clue why God gave them, but we still have to observe them. And so when you talk about a weakening of the faith, the fact is the exact opposite has actually happened. We did lose a number of B'nai Yisrael in those terrible death camps, God forbid. But since those death camps, Eretz Israel has now become a very live, vibrant place. We have Yeshivot, Bet Yaakov, all throughout Yerushalayim. And then in America and other countries, we have Yeshivot all over the place, more than we ever had. As far as in comparison, there are more observant B'nai Yisrael now than there were before the Holocaust. So I really don't look at it in that same sense. But that doesn't mean that it's not challenging. It doesn't mean that we don't have emotions and feelings. We very much do have. But we're not the only people that suffered in that terrible, terrible thing.
Yes, that's true. Okay. Dr. Akiva, one other question I have is I read about you're still waiting for the Messiah to come and what I think you consider Judgment Day. And how do you feel about the people who are not Jewish? Do they also get judged? Do they get the same judgment and the same afterlife?
That's a really great question. I would like to say a couple things about that. First, I've already talked about the judgment. We're always judged once a year, every year. But in actuality, the truth is we're judged every month. Okay. Every time you look up in the sky and you see a full moon and you watch it get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until it's a brand new moon, the day that it's Rosh Chodesh, that's the new month, That's when all of us again have like a, we go to like the judicial court, you know, just the local court. But in Rosh Hashanah, it's like you go before the Supreme Court, okay? And so, yes, we're always judged. When we have judgment, one of the great misunderstandings is so many people have taught among other religions, not in observance of Judaism, but among other religions, that if you don't have a blood sacrifice, you can't have your sins forgiven. But we have many indications in HaTorah where there's many ways God forgives sins. For example, if you look at the half shekel offering that's given, it clearly states in the Hebrew and even in the English, in most versions, this is an atonement for your soul. And so we see that money is an atonement. And we teach actually that if you have a relative that's died and that might not have been exactly the kind of person they should have been, you should give tzedakah. You should give money in their behalf. Why? It will help elevate their neshama. You should study HaTorah in their memory. Why? Because if you're doing it in their memory, they're connected to that, and that will help elevate their neshama. Okay? And so as far as like hell is concerned, we don't take a position that some religions take about how people are going to be tortured for the rest of their life and so on and so forth. In one of our courses of Ineinu HaTorah Institute, Bereshit 104, we teach how loving, merciful, gracious, long-suffering, forgiving God is. In fact, we teach, the Torah clearly teaches that God will give downright, outright rebellion. He will forgive that. It's like you tell your child, don't go across the street. And your child looks you right in the eye and says, I am going across the street. You can go to hell. Gives you bad words. Stomps out of the house. Goes across the street. And then does some other naughty things, God forbid. And as long as they're living in that attitude, well, they're going to be held accountable for their actions. But when they come home, they say, Mom, Dad, you know, I've grown up some. I'm sorry. I really made a mistake. Then, you know, you say, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, I'm going to go to an anger management class. I'm going to learn. So what we have is we have acknowledgement of sin. We have teshuva. Teshuva is turning away from sin, making a complete turnaround. That means, like, if you're an alcoholic, go to Alcoholics Anonymous. You're a gambler, go to Gamblers Anonymous. That means if you have anger problems, go to anger management. It means you make a plan to deal with your problem, and God will forgive any sin. So we have that variation there where there's no unpardonable sin, God will forgive it. But if a person continues down the same road with unrepentance, what essentially happens in our position is that that it's just, if you look in HaTorah, on the second day of creation, all the hosts of the heavens were created. And along with those were the neshama of every human being that lives. And so the only way that our neshama could be created was that we had a name, an essence. Our name represents our essence. And so when God wrote Akiva Gamliel ben Mechoel into Sefer Chaim, the Book of Life, my essence came alive. My soul was created. Okay, and the only way that it could ever be taken out of the Book of Life as if I were to go out and live an outright, rebellious, sinful life and never repent, never turn around, and then God would erase my name, and God forbid, what would happen then is it would be just as if I never existed.
Okay. Dr. Akiva, then, so you don't believe in reincarnation?
Oh, absolutely do.
Are you dead?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, when Hevel was murdered by Cain, we clearly teach that the next son, what was Seth, was a reincarnation of Hevel. And there are many examples of reincarnation. There is a particular law among B'nai Yisrael. I don't want to say much in this sense because it's not really observed today like it's intended to be observed in many areas. But if a brother dies without any children, the other brother is to take that brother's wife and to marry him. Why? Because that will allow his brother's soul to be reincarnated in the union of his brother and his wife at the birth of their first male child. So yes, we call it transmigration of the soul, but it's the same thing as reincarnation.
Okay. Dr. Akiva, then, so, but you are waiting for that so-called judgment day or that day the Messiah comes.
Well, we face Judgment Day every month, every year. There's not going to be anything more exceptional than that's a Christian belief. That's not a Jewish belief.
Okay, Dr. Akiva. Then back to my original question: Christians, such as Catholics like myself, we do have rituals and where we repent and things
right.
like that. So do we have the same rights then? As
you I'm sorry. I didn't go there. I apologize.
That's okay.
As a matter of fact, any individual that observes the seven commands that God gave to Adam and Harishona and Harishona, and again reiterated to Noah, they will definitely have a place in Gan Eden.
Okay.
There's no hell to worry about. There's no purgatory. There's nothing to worry about in that sense. It's simply following seven simple commands, and you're assured. We call it Gan Eden, but it's Hashemayim, the heaven. And you'll be, you know, you'll be with God. There's seven different heavens. Okay. And they have different levels based on righteousnesses and things like that. I mean, certainly, Mother Teresa, for example, she's a tzaddikus. She's an incredible person. I mean, may she rest in peace. I mean, my goodness, the world was changed by her. And the great righteous deeds that she did, an example, she's going to be up there right at the very top.
Yes, I believe so, too. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Akiva, then, what I was leading to then, I didn't know you believed in reincarnation, but until that day comes, when Messiah comes and we'll be with heaven, do you believe you keep reincarnating till that time, or is there, when you die until that time comes, is there something that happens?
Well, actually, we believe in perfection of the individual. Mitos is, I don't want to call them laws, but I want to call them guidelines that we follow to perfect our life. And so our whole goal is to perfect ourselves. You see, Kedusha, holiness, is separation. We separate from the world. Like, for example, in our home, we don't have television. We don't watch television. We have a television. We can watch audio or, CDs. We can watch CDs. We can watch the VHSs. We have a few, but it's not like, when I say we have a few, we have quite a few. But what I'm trying to say is we're very selective. It's very difficult to find anything that doesn't strike out, God forbid, at your holiness, at your righteousness. And so we're back to sneeze. It's how you dress, how you walk, how you talk, what you say, what you do. And so we live a life, a righteous life. When HaTorah says you should remember the Shabbat day, one of the commands for B'nai Yisrael is to keep it holy. And for us to observe the seventh day and to keep it holy, that's an oath, a sign for the rest of the world that God created the heavens and the earth and rested on the seventh day. And so if we don't observe that, then the sign isn't there. Okay. And so there's various places where God has said there's signs and that we're required to do certain things to fulfill, to observe those signs. And we're not worried about a judgment day. We have a judgment day every month, every year. We're not worried about hell because, you know, you just have to be totally way out there. You know, it's unbelievable. As far as Mashiach is concerned, this is a great misunderstanding among non-Jews. The word Mashiach means anointed, okay, or anointed one. Every Moloch of B'nai Yisrael, every king of B'nai Yisrael was anointed, their Mashiach. Every Kohen Gadol of B'nai Yisrael, and from Pentecost himself in the first temple area, I think there were 18 Kohen Gadols just descended from him, and there were a number also in the second. Every one of them was a Mashiach. Okay? As far as Mashiach is concerned, there's Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David. Okay? One of the issues that we have, like with the genealogy of Jesus, for example, is if you're very careful and you just look at it very carefully. And 2 Samuel, there's a statement which the HaTanakh says that the one, and God is speaking to David HaMelech, King David, and God is saying to him, he's saying, the one that builds my house, he is the one whom Mashiach will come from. Well, if you notice that was Shlomo HaMelech, Solomon. However, if you look at the genealogy, one of the genealogies that's used in Matthew, I believe it is from Nathan, another son of David. So that's a problem.
Yeah.
And so we go through these areas. You know, you can talk about Mashiach all along. There's lots of issues. But we recognize there's a Mashiach that will be killed in war. That's Mashiach ben Yosef. And there's a Mashiach that will rule over B'nai Yisrael and over the world. And that's Mashiach ben David. That will be a descendant of Shlomo HaMelech as well as David HaMelech.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Akiva, I have read about other religions as well, like Islam and Muslims, and I found some misconceptions in theirs also. I just wanted to ask, like, in the Muslim world, they don't believe in engaging in war or starting wars, but they do believe they can protect themselves. Do you have beliefs like that too? It's not like, would you outright start a war, the Jewish people, or do you?
It's interesting that you asked that question. This week's Parshot, every week, B'nai Yisrael, I'm going to have to adjust my chair a little bit.
Okay.
Every week, B'nai Yisrael has a Parshot of HaTorah that all around the world we're each to study. Okay, in this particular week, it has to be Pentecost. That begins around B'midbar. That's Numbers around chapter 24, I believe, something like that. But it so happens this week that the creator of the universe, and last week also, in the Parshot last week, says to harass, you know, a particular group of people. Why? Because they were trying to attract us into idol worship, okay, through sex. And so the young women would try to make themselves very appealing to the men of Israel and then draw them into idol worship. And so there are times as a result. Also, Amalek. Amalek is the group of people that when B'nai Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim, and we're all walking out of Mitzrayim, and so the elderly, the lame, the sick are at the very back of the group, and Amalek came out and attacked those that were the weakest, those that were the sick, those that were the elderly, and so God has condemned Amalek, and yes, those are groups of people that we would not hesitate to deal with. Now, in our world today, we have a world that's more or less united now, unlike what it was 50 or 100 years ago. And so I really experience a lot more tolerance among Israel.
Dr. Akiva, another thing about penance. Does it matter what the sins are? Say, like, in Catholicism, there is what we call mortal sins, and then there's sins. And the mortal sins are very bad. So, say, like, if someone murdered someone else for no good reason, is there a difference in the penance or in the judgment?
As far as sins are concerned, you know, God can forgive any sin. But part of the teshuva is restitution. And one of the seven Noahic laws is to establish courts and governments in each country. And so each country has a different way of exacting restitution. In some of the Mideastern countries, for example, if you steal, they'll cut your hand off. That's the way they deal with that problem. And so every country, I mean, in Europe, there are countries that don't have gas chambers, electric chairs, needles. You live in a prison the rest of your life. But that's their laws. And that's how they deal with it. In America, especially if you live in certain states, you're going to get it in a very short time, you know. So restitution is different than forgiveness. Restitution is what you're paying. See, God says, mita k'neged mita, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. That doesn't mean you poke my eye out, we poke your eye out. No, it doesn't mean that at all. It means if you're a doctor and you use your eye to earn millions of dollars, my restitution is millions of dollars to you. And so everything is kind of relative, okay? And so as far as penance is concerned, God is always forgiving. You just simply acknowledge your sin. You turn around from your sin. You offer due restitution. You don't repeat your sin. You're forgiven. It's as simple as that. But that doesn't mean that you might not be prosecuted by the legal institution.
Okay. Dr. Akiva, I just have a couple more questions, actually. You said you don't have a TV in your house.
We have a television. We don't have like the cable or a satellite or anything like that.
So I was wondering about like media on the computer as you're using the computer.
Right.
All the media is on there and how you feel about them. And
the computer, it's a constant hassle because you get a lot of junk mail. And there's a lot of garbage out there, and I get hundreds. I mean, seeing as we have so many people come visit us, we get a lot of junk, a lot of trash. but we try to use as many filters and things to eliminate it. Now, as far as do we watch programs on the computer, the answer is yes. We watch Tim Russert. I think it's what's the name of his program? I don't know, but I mean, we watch Harry Schiefer. I think that's Face the Nation, and we get audio downloads from like Jim Lehrer and things like that. So yeah, there are a lot of news programs that we watch on the internet, and there are also other things. Like for example, if you go to the Chabad, which is a observant Jewish site, they have videos that you can watch there that are really great. And they have audios that are available that you can listen to, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of types of audios. You can listen to teachings and things. So there's a lot of resources that are available to us on the internet, which are really excellent. Yep. And as you well know, and there's a lot of garbage out there that's just terrible. So it's being selective. But you see, the problem with television is it's hard to be selective. You don't know what they're going to advertise, you know. I mean, if you could have television where you could say, all right, I want to have clean television. That means every advertisement's got to follow certain standards. That means that certain advertisers can't even advertise. I mean, you don't see things like men and women in bed together and just a lot of things. You don't see kids walking together, teenagers, a young boy and a young girl. There's just so many things you just don't see. You know, if they had that kind of clean television, it could be very worthwhile if it taught good, moral, sound lessons in life, if it wasn't just for the purpose of being entertaining.
I agree. Dr. Akiva, how do you feel about other media types such as music? Are there types of music that you would not allow?
Or? Well, absolutely. There's a great deal of music that is just, for example, men are not to listen to other ladies sing. Okay. It's pretty hard to avoid that because you go into stores, you're going to have that all the time. You're going to be riding in automobiles or wherever, and you're going to get some of that. There's a study being done right now in Mount Evans with the institute down in Denver, Denver University, and their large telescope. They're studying light pollution, and it's amazing how light pollution has just filled the entire metro area. And so you can hardly even, it's just a haze out there at night because of light pollution. Same thing as with music and with other types of media. If you're around it, you're going to get some of that pollution, God forbid. You don't want to, but that's, I mean, you can sit in traffic. You're going to hear everybody around you, blang, 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 you know?
Yeah, I agree. Dr. Akiva,
can I interrupt you one more time?
Yes.
And now they have a thing on one of the cell phones that if you like call somebody up, you can even have a song being played while you're waiting for them to answer the phone. So you're forced to listen to that song while you're waiting for them to answer their phone.
Okay. Yes, I know. Dr. Akiva, do you speak a lot of Hebrew at home?
Well, not as much as I'd like to. We're not in a community, so I actually try to practice speaking Ivri to my pets, to the animals outside, and trying to employ it as much as possible because there is, when you're in a community, you really use your Ivri a lot more than when you're isolated.
Dr. Akiva, it seems like Jewish communities are very close-knit, and you take care of each other. Is that true? Charity among each other?
Oh, the charity, you know, I mean, I know that within the Catholic Church also, that's a big thing, too. I think we have a lot of similarities in that particular area. We call it tzedakah. You know, I think they call it the Catholic Charities or something like that. And, yes, we really do try. I remember one time when I was really down and out, and I was so poor, and somebody knocks on my door, here's $700. Someone else knocks on my door, here's $500, you know, and that's a gift. Nothing, you cannot pay it back. Okay, here's a big turkey, here's some chicken. Yes, there's a lot of charity among Jewish people. Most rebbeim have what they call a tzedakah fund. And this fund is used to help individuals out that are in need. And in addition to that, we have a loan society, a gemach, which means that you can go and you can borrow money and you will not be charged interest. And usually you just post-date, let's say you borrow $1,000, you just post-date whatever the agreement is, 10 checks at $100 each, and then you know, that's how it's taken care of. So, yes, we have, we believe in tzedakah, we believe in charity. I want you to know, at B'nai Noach Torah Institute, we just don't use our charity just for those that are Jewish. I have used my charity fund for people that are many different religions, religions that I have absolutely no agreement with. You don't look at the religion, you look at the person, you look at the need, you look at the situation, and you try to help if you can.
Dr. Akiva, thank you. That was my next question. I only have one last question.
Okay.
Can you explain to me why you don't believe in, like, shaking hands or hugging and things like that?
Well, we do believe in shaking hands, and we do believe in hugging. It's just who you shake hands with and who you hug. the Torah teaches that a man is to only really hug his mother, his wife, a grandmother, and not to hug other ladies, and vice versa. Even in the New Testament, Paul says it's not good for a man to touch a lady. Well, it also applies to ladies. It's not good for a lady to touch a man because it's not modest. It's not sneeze. There are a lot of individuals that don't like to be touched. And then, of course, there's places that people get touched that make them very angry. And so we try to establish within our community, it's not even appropriate for us to really compliment a lady. In other words, if you're wearing a beautiful dress, I could say in a very common way that you look nice today. But if I went overboard, oh, your dress looks great. Oh, how, you know, that would be going too far. And so we have what we call fences. You know, when you tell your kid, don't cross the sidewalk, you know he's going to cross the sidewalk. What you're really hoping is that he won't cross the street. And so when we say not to touch a lady and not to hug and things like that, we realize that there is going to be some contact. I'm a businessman, and I have to weigh whether or not the embarrassment to the individual would be great, or if they would understand. If they don't understand, then I may shake hands, for example. Unfortunately, there are ladies that like to come up and hug me all the time. I don't know. And you can't push people away, and you can't act stale, but you still have to try to be modest and not encourage that type of behavior.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, we want to thank everyone for joining with us. And if you have additional questions, please feel free to send them to questions@bnti.us. And for all those that observe HaTorah excitedly and enthusiastically, may Hashem bless. Shalom, shalom.